Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of Nolcast. Bud, congratulations to you, to me, and to all who listen. We have made our way through the summer. We have some real form of football to actually speak of, and very much looking forward to kind of giving a brief look back at kind of the information that's available, the limited information that's available for through the first 3 days of camp. So this will be a podcast mainly driven by what we've seen or what we've noticed so far, and look forward to jumping into it. As always, want to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three ingredients, one fantastic product, and a podcast sponsor that's stood by us for 3 years in a row now, and somebody that we are very fortunate to work with, and very fortunate to be able to speak of a product that you and I both authentically enjoy and appreciate. And thank you to them, and thank you to all the listeners who have been very, very supportive of our efforts as well.
They're very happy with us, and we are extremely happy with them, and with all the great feedback our listeners give them. So thanks again to them. Ingram, we did not plan to podcast necessarily on Wednesday. We did not really want to do a podcast. That was basically, hey, these guys aren't even wearing pads yet. What have we learned in the first 3 days of camp when they're running around in shorts? As anybody who played ball can tell you, a lot of these guys who are camp all-stars for the first couple of days all of a sudden disappear. When the pads start popping, body gets a little bit more sore. Not just, hey, I'm sore from running around, but I'm sore from getting whacked. And then we see who really wants to fight through. But I think there's enough for a show here with the install going on, the new practice style, who we see lining up at certain positions, and the opening press conferences from Willie and Harlan Barnett, the defense coordinator, and Walt Bell. Nolcast listeners were given those episodes recently. I put the audio up from the press conference as recorded by our reporter there on the scene, and very excited to do that. We'll try to do that for y'all throughout the year, so hopefully y'all listen to that. We'll probably discuss a few of the things they said, and I'm probably just under an hour-long show tonight. We are not taking questions tonight, by the way. If you have sent us questions recently, we certainly appreciate it. However, we're going to hold those questions for next week, because next week the team goes to IMG Academy for practices which are completely closed. And even though I'm at IMG on about a monthly basis for my recruiting job, I don't know that they're going to let me in for this one. They might be kind of on high alert. I guess we will just have to see. But it is completely closed to media and to the public, so don't drive down to IMG thinking you're going to catch a glimpse, because you will not. That's due to the NCAA recruiting dead period. They're not allowed to publicize any sort of off-campus thing where there are recruitable prospects at. So you want to jump into this? I know we have a pretty good outline here. Let's maybe start with the throwback. This is something kind of cool. Bailey Hockman mentioned it. Some other players mentioned it, and Willie mentioned it. You know that Willie is having these guys watch some of the Bowden documentary every night, the Bowden Dynasty?
That's really a great thing. I mean, it's a great way to give those kids an appreciation of who that statue is that they walk by every day, give them a better idea as to the name that's on the field, and just an appreciation for the history of the program. And you know, if you're listening to the Nolcast right now, we don't need to waste our time and describe to you how dominant Florida State was for a large swath of the middle to late 80s, 90s, and first year of the 2000s. But it was just a special time, and any kind of greater appreciation for those that have come before you, and a greater understanding as to the history of the program, I don't see too many downsides to that. That was another, yet in a long line of pretty cool things that Mr. Taggart has installed so far.
Just smart moves, man. Like, who is against that? Nobody. Everybody's for that. Same thing with hiring legendary defensive coordinator Mickey Andrews to be a special assistant to the head coach.
Softest spot in my heart is for one Mickey Andrews. I mean, that was just awesome. I saw a video of him working with one of the defensive ends today. It was just a great thing to watch, and to see Mickey end a 45-second conversation about football with a little bit of a fist pound is indicative of maybe Coach Andrews himself was involved with the times a little bit as well. But man, I love it. I'm glad to see that Mickey's involved. I don't think too many downside or too much risk is involved in something like that. And just great to see him involved in the program and in whatever involvement or what level of involvement that may be.
You know, I went golfing with my dad today, and we were chatting at lunch afterwards, and he said, "What do you think the hiring of Mickey is just ceremonial?" And I said, "You know, in some ways, sure, and I think it's really good, right? I don't think there's a booster out there who doesn't like Mickey Andrews, and you know, he's got some colorful stories, to be sure." And I said, "But here's the other thing. You know, if later in his career, if Bobby had surrounded him with some younger coaches who had new, fresh ideas and had helped him evolve as the spread was becoming in vogue, and the spread really adapted kind of as a response to what guys were doing, like Mickey Andrews and like the Stoopses when they were coordinators out there at Kansas State and those type of defenses that were being run. Because they were just shutting down these pro-style offenses so badly. I think if Mickey had been surrounded by some younger guys who were bringing some new, fresh ideas in, the defense that Michigan State runs, that Harlan Barnett runs, that Florida State now runs, I think Mickey's defense eventually could have looked a lot like that. Extremely aggressive, up in your face, wanting to really kind of bring the pain to the offense. A lot of one-on-one coverage. Now, Mickey ran, more man-to-man. Florida State runs a cover four scheme, which converts to man-to-man against vertical routes. But I think that's very much something that maybe Mickey's defense would have evolved into. And I think from a coaching standpoint, I know he's not going to be necessarily coaching these guys hard every day. In fact, he's not even official coach. So, you know, how much coaching he's allowed to do is probably a little up in the air. But look, even if he's not super up on the scheme FSU's running, and I'm not saying he's not, I'm saying, but if he's not, the guy damn sure still knows how to look at a defensive back's footwork and hand technique, especially how to play good press coverage. I'm pretty sure he'll be able to notice some things, scribble down in the notebook if he wants to tell Harlan or maybe even tell a kid directly. There's no downside of having Mickey Andrews out there on the practice field to me and in the building.
Great stuff. Excited about it. And just any time you can have somebody like that involved, I still, as many do, think that there should be some type of kind of larger formal ideas to what Andrews meant to the program, whether that be a statue or a street or a facility or something like that named after him. He was just as influential as anybody as far as defensive ideas, and the defense that he put together for about 20 years was as good as anybody in college football was fielding. So great to see him back. I hope that it's not that it's just rather the beginning of Andrew's involvement with the program, and maybe one day there's something of larger significance that can be put permanently in place that's reflective of what he's meant to this program over the last 30 years or so.
How about the practice field? That'd be cool. If you have the Al Dunlap indoor practice facility, you could have the Mickey Andrews practice fields, the outdoor portion of it.
That would be fitting. Absolutely. Maybe you could, throw a couple of his colorful sayings and put those on the walls to some of what he used to tell the defense backs back in the day. So keep it a little lively.
So here's one for you. When the kids got out there to practice, the younger kids actually were not out there. Did you catch that? They had a separate practice for freshmen, newcomers, and people who were maybe injured and didn't get to participate in practice in the spring.
I did see this. Is this more like a way to bring kids up to speed as to what they want out of practice, or what exactly do you think this is? I know this is something that maybe other members of the coaching tree that Taggart descends from have done, but what's the in your opinion, is the idea behind something like that?
I think that's exactly right. Now here's the deal. This is kind of cool. For NCAA rules, you don't get to coach 20 hours a week. Each kid gets to be coached 20 hours a week. So there's no real limit on the number of practices you can run and how many different groupings you want to break this down into. Just, you can only coach each kid 20 hours a week. So if you get the young kids out there and the kids who have not gone through one of your practices yet, and you say, okay, hey, this is the tempo at which we're going to practice at, this is the intensity at which we're going to practice at, we're going to get to give you guys a lot more individual attention early on. I think that makes a whole lot of sense. And then when you get to the veteran guys, you can start doing more of your install for your actual, like you know, installing the new offense, installing the new defense immediately. I think it makes a whole lot of sense. Back in the day, 20, 30 years ago, did you know freshmen actually reported a week early, typically? And they don't do that anymore. And they started to practice early so they would be up to speed. I think this is really smart. I know Jim Harbaugh started doing some stuff like this at Michigan. He also, you have a certain number of coaching hours on the field, but you can also do classroom hours. And Harbaugh, a couple of years ago, took his team outside and did a class on grass, as he called it, and basically taught the concepts there in the outdoor classroom, if you will, Ingram. I think it's pretty smart. I don't really see any downside to it. If it helps the guys that you're going to be counting on in the fall not be slowed down by the young guys early on, that's three more days of practice that you're able to utilize. And then on day four, you can bring those younger kids over after they've had a couple days to acclimate to the speed and intensity of the practice. And they're able to understand it, and they're able to more seamlessly transition into that. It's still going to be hard for them because of the quality of people they're practicing against now. But I think it's another pretty smart idea.
I think it's a real good idea. I mean, this idea that I'm about to mention kind of phased out of college football right around the time you and I were born. But there used to be whole, you know, freshman college football teams. You used to practice as a unit and have basically a full year to kind of get yourself ready for the larger, you know, ultimate scale that is the varsity team. So I think it's a great idea to try to get kids brought up to speed. Maybe you know, slightly reduce the nerves of some as far as what's involved in the first practice. And like you said, anything that you can do to allow for greater efficiency once you do get these kids together, I think is nothing but going to pay positive dividends.
100%. What do we got next here? Just a reminder I wanted to kind of give folks. I do think that having these schemes be quote-unquote lethally simplistic or simpler, certainly than the old schemes FSU was running, and there's no doubt there were a lot of complexities in both the offensive and defensive scheme that FSU was running previously. But even transitioning from those to a simpler scheme, it's still going to be a significant transition, one that will have bumps in the road, both in practice and in games. You are going from one of the most pro-style teams in the nation to a wide-open spread offense. Now, it doesn't mean throwing the ball all around. Obviously, they're going to be more of a running team, but the formations and whatnot and the plays are different. Defensively, you're going from more of a cover three, you know, middle of the field close based defense to a much simpler but still different cover four base scheme. I just want people to keep that in mind. I do think you can take the concept of lethal simplicity, and lethal simplicity does not necessarily equal instant mastery, right? I think in time it'll pay dividends, but there will be some bumps in the road on this. So if you've been out there watching practice or been reading the practice reports and seeing that stuff's not been looking, you know, super great at times, I think it looks about where it needs to be, especially considering who is on the field. So just a little thing to remember there. The last thing I wanted to talk about before we get into sort of offensive and defense specific stuff is, and as media, we make fun of this, and we should. Every time there's a new coaching hire on any side of the ball or even an entirely new staff, we're going to be more aggressive, more aggressive, more aggressive. This team, you know, how are we going to change? We're going to be more aggressive. Have you ever in your life heard a defensive coordinator come in and say, we're going to be more passive?
We're going to play on the balls of our feet or the heel. We're going to play on our heels. We're going to try to react to what they're doing to us. That's kind of like the strength and conditioning coach. If it was too fancy before, then they're out in the parking lot flipping tires. If they were out in the parking lot flipping tires, then, well, we've got them on, a much more advanced form of body monitoring and plyometrics, et cetera. But, yeah, everybody wants to be more aggressive. How many of those staffs actually follow through on that is maybe a bit more of a legitimate conversation.
Even going from Mickey to Mark Stoops, they were saying it was going to be more aggressive. And we were like, really? What? No, it's not going to be more aggressive. It's
going
to be...
We have nine guys on the line of scrimmage and playing man-to-man because that's what we used to do.
a lot, yeah. So in saying that, I want to let you know as a listener that we know when we say it's going to be more aggressive, that sounds just like Homer talk. And if you're a smart listener, you're probably like, yeah, every staff says that. I think there are legitimate reasons to believe both on offense and defense they will be more aggressive. That means more shots down the field on offense. Even though there's less passing overall, it's going to be a lot less, you know, controlled passing game. You know, as far as controlling the football, I think they'll use the run to control the football more and throw the ball down the field more, especially off play action, want to create those shots. And then defensively, it's going to be a whole lot of press coverage. I mean, you're talking probably playing press 85-90% of the time. They live in press. They never want to give the receiver a clean look off the line of scrimmage. And they will even press in like 3rd and 13, 3rd and 16 situations. So let's get out in front of this narrative right now. Last year, everybody complained when the defensive backs were off the ball on like 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2. Sometimes those complaints made sense. Other times, it was just fans who didn't necessarily know what they were talking about, just running their mouth. I predict that this year the complaint will be that Florida State will give up a third down or two of, you know, 10-plus yards, and the corners will be in press coverage, and the fans will complain about that, saying that they should have played off coverage. That's my prediction on that, but they will be a lot more aggressive. They are also pretty aggressive in long down and distance situations, right? They're going to play their base cover four read defense, which is a press defense for the most part in standard downs where run and pass are about equally likely. But come passing downs, they want to get the ball out of that quarterback's hands quickly, and they want to make that quarterback operate under duress, and those receivers get off press coverage and dare them to get off press coverage quickly, which they don't think they're going to be able to do very well against these corners, and make contested throws and contested catches. So I do believe Florida State will be more aggressive on both sides of the ball. That will lead to some big plays, by the way, given up by the defense. But if that happens, all right, the offense gets the ball back more quickly. What they do not want to have happen is for the opposing offense to hold the ball for a long time, thus keeping FSU's offense off the field. And I think they will play a defense that is conducive to preventing time-consuming drives.
That's a good recap, Bud, as far as something that you hear a lot, just as general coach speak, and whether or not that may actually play into what you see on the field on Saturday. So we'll go from just kind of our overall or our macro thoughts as to what's going on so far. It's not exactly like we're going to go position by position here per se, but why don't we move to the offense, and we'll start with the quarterbacks. And I don't blame any media members, and I certainly don't I certainly don't fault anybody for reporting what they see with their eyes, but I do think that there's maybe times that we can jump to conclusions based off one or two plays or something like that, and maybe there's a bit of a trend in this, particularly at the quarterback position right now.
Yeah, look, you know, I everybody's like, this guy's ahead, this guy's ahead, this guy's ahead. Talking to people who have seen the entirety of all three practices so far, I don't get the feeling that anybody is far ahead of anybody. Francois, so far, with no pads on and no pressure or anything like that, right, has seemed to have fewer of the misses that he used to have on the shorter throws, which is good, as far as not sailing balls or dirting them. I think Blackman and Francois have a little bit better physical talents than Hockman, but I don't think anybody's really ahead right now. I know that everybody wants to take one narrative or another narrative and run with it, and I don't get the impression that anybody is really ahead of anybody right now. I think it's a true competition, which is what we thought it would be. The other thing is, like, with this offense, there will be some throwing up of balls to receivers and saying, go make a play. This is something we wanted to see more of in the last offense, right? hey, the guy doesn't have to be wide open for you to throw it to him necessarily. If your guy is bigger and a better athlete, give him a shot at it. Well, Tamarian Terry has missed, what, practice and a half. Naquan Murray has been very limited so far, coming back off the knee injury. DJ Matthews has been out for a lot of camps so far. So those are your top three receivers right there. And you haven't had them for the majority of the first 3 days. So far, the defensive backs have just absolutely dominated the receivers, which is not totally unexpected, given who you have out there and, more importantly, who you do not have out there. So excuse me if I'm not going to anoint somebody at quarterback, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic here or you know, talk like I'm better than listeners. I'm not. I'm just saying, number one, I don't think there's any reason to make a judgment after 3 days. Number two, there's definitely not a reason to make a judgment after 3 days when the top three receivers have largely been out. It just doesn't make any sense, because part of this is going to be who throws a more accurate ball to a guy to give him a chance to catch the ball in a one-on-one situation, right? It's hard to tell that when the guys you're throwing those one-on-ones to are getting dominated by the corners out there.
Look, it doesn't matter what, like, people could go to practice and see nothing but the quarterbacks tying their shoes and doing jumping jacks, and the broader fan base is going to ask people's ideas to what they take away from that, or whether or not they get a feeling as to who the potential starter is going to be. This is always, you know, going to be question one on fans' minds, and I don't fault anybody, again, for giving their opinion. I just think that if you've got it in the back of your mind that the quarterback decision has been made, I would slow your roll a little bit there. There's a lot to play out, and an awful lot of things that have yet to be decided.
No doubt. By the way, Ingram, I think at this time we should stop and take a little time to thank our second sponsor. That is the For the Table Restaurant Group with Madison Social. They have they're celebrating their fifth birthday, man. They've been with us for almost the entirety of their time, and I know they got a couple cool specials going on.
They do, man. They've got one that Matt and his team didn't talk to us about this. But I think that if you and I were to request some kind of special, it might look something like this. And this is we'll have this out on Thursday morning. So keep this in your mind if you're in the Tallahassee areas. But on Thursdays, they have a thing called Social Agreement. And Bud, Social Agreement is for $40, you get two burgers, an order of wings, two bourbons, and two beers. So you can have yourself quite a lunch catching up with an old friend or anything else. So keep them in mind. That's just one of many things that they do that's unique. But again, two burgers, an order of wings, two bourbons, and two beers for $40 total. That is a fantastic deal, and another great thing / fantastic deal they have going on, I know, is something they'll be doing Sunday, the day before the Virginia Tech game.
Yeah, man. I'll be there. You'll be there. A couple hundred of our closest friends and listeners will be there. That's the Game Day Weekend Bar Crawl with the Nolcast. You can get your tickets right now, $20. That's the Game Day Weekend Bar Crawl with the Nolcast, $20. It's on Sunday before Labor Day, the day before Labor Day. Check-in is at 2 to 4. You're going to get a proof Madison Social at Madison Social, a proof Mango Wit at Central, and a proof Warpath IPA with special Nolcast treatment at Township, as well as a Nolcast Punting is Bunting koozie that will be perfect for game day the next day. Check-in, 2 to 4 o'clock, actual bar crawl, kind of that 3:30 to 7:30 window. You know what comes on at 7:30, I believe, is the Miami-LSU games. We'll probably stick around for that and see how good Miami and LSU look. That will probably be like a 7-3 bludgeoning, given how those teams play offense. We've already sold a good number of tickets on this one, and we expect to have a couple hundred more, y'all. So definitely come out. It was a great time last time. I know we did it for the spring game without the bar crawl. And because we had such great turnout, we decided we need to do a bar crawl with this to really take advantage of all three of the great Madison Social properties, along with Proof Brewing. So very excited about this one. You can go to madisonsocial.com/gameday-bar-crawl. That's madisonsocial.com/gameday-bar-crawl.
Bud, we took a second to thank our sponsor, and I'll take a real quick second here to kind of pat ourselves on the back. If you're a loyal listener to the Nolcast, you were well-versed as to just the idea as to how play calling is going to go, how that selection process is going to play itself out. And it's kind of an interesting idea as to how these various parties on the offensive staff will all try to coexist, and ultimately whose choice it'll be that the final play that's sent out to the quarterback before the ball snapped.
Now, this one, I wasn't going to include in this, but we did receive several questions from people, both in person and via email, about whether other media outlets were trying to drive a wedge between offensive coordinator Walt Bell and head coach Willie Taggart, and whether they understood who was going to be calling the plays and all this stuff. This is very simple. This is like 90%. Willie Taggart's offense. It is not like 50-50 Willie Taggart, Walt Bell. Walt Bell is the offensive coordinator. Willie Taggart is the play caller. Walt Bell and Greg Fry will work ahead like we said they would back when we told you this, I think in February. And then I never thought this was controversial at all, but I guess some other people didn't know, so they were confused by it or something. But, you know, if you listen to our show, you know. They're going to work ahead. Florida State is a tempo team. They want to run fast. They want to get the play called in 7 seconds. You cannot do that if you're hunting through the play sheet and calling the plays as the coach. So you need guys to work ahead for you. So here's how it'll work. Walt Bell will focus on the passing game mostly. Greg Fry will work on the run game. They will work ahead. If the current play works, Greg knows what run play he'll suggest. Walt knows what pass play he'll suggest. Willie's going to tell him, give me a pass, give me a run, that type of thing. You know, give me a screen, give me a play action shot, those type of things. They'll also have suggestions if the current play does not work, you know, so that you know what down and distance you'll be in and potentially from what hash. This is exactly how they did it at Oregon, too. This is how a lot of tempo teams work. I know this is new to FSU fans because they've not been a tempo team before, but to me, it doesn't seem – does that seem complicated to you? It just seems like you got guys working ahead for you so you can ultimately pick out the right one and you don't take forever. As you may have seen in previous episodes of Florida State Football with somebody hunting through the play sheet forever to get a play caller.
Yeah. God, that's hilarious just thinking back on some of the various, you know, trying to, you know, spending 18 seconds in your play sheet at Clemson and then calling a play in and being pissed off because it doesn't get snapped in time. That's, and I think that's exactly why some of the confusion, or maybe not even confusion, just kind of ambiguity that exists with some people that follow the program right now, because we haven't really had an offensive coordinator at this program for the past 10 years. You might add somebody that had that title, but how much he really acted as though an offensive coordinator would at the vast majority of the programs, not so much. So you have some similarity or some carryover in the fact that you have a head coach who's going to be calling plays, but you do have a different situation that you have a very legitimate offensive coordinator. So I think some are still trying to wrap their head around exactly what that will look like, being that you have somebody on staff that's, you know, much more than just kind of a figurehead or somebody that's had a title bestowed to them.
Absolutely. And look, Walt Bell is coaching the quarterbacks. He is coordinating the offense. I've been told by other guys on the staff that they are extremely impressed with how organized Bell is. And look, he said he in his own press conference, you know, he's extremely type A, and then he was followed up a question, you know, well, how do you mesh that with not being the play caller? And he goes, you know, I'm type A about being the best employee I can be, which is, you know, a pretty funny answer. It did bring some interesting thoughts to my head, though. Back in the spring, we were asked, how long do you think Walt Bell will be here? And, you know, my thought was, well, you know, he hasn't had a whole lot of, like, individual success as an offensive coordinator so far. You know, he's shown some promise, and I think it was pretty good vision of Taggart to see through some of the hardships that had happened to his offenses, like his quarterbacks going down at Maryland and seeing the successes that he had when guys were healthy. But I think Bell, with how organized he is, does have some qualities of a future head coach potentially. And a lot of the, how long he's going to be here is going to be a question of what type of job is he willing to leave for, right? And I know we're talking about this before he's ever coached a game, so we're sort of having to assume that he's going to do a good job, and I'm safe to make that assumption, to be honest. But, you know, if we think he's going to wait for like a Power 5 job, then I think he'll be here at least three seasons. If he's willing to jump for any old Sunbelt job, you know, or CUSA job, you know, be it Troy or Tulane or Middle Tennessee or something like that, then who knows? You know, like that's sort of the one factor. And then I know we had a lot of questions about that too. But I think he's doing a good job so far. The one thing I think you'll see him implement with his offense, and this is, again, like I said, about 90-95% Willie Taggart's offense. I think some of the impressive stuff that Bell did, even back to Arkansas State, was some of the RPO stuff. And I think you will see some of that incorporated as well. But the vast majority of this is Willie's offense. And Walt talked about coming in and having to learn Willie's offense. This is not a 50-50 meshing, you know, mashup of Walt and Willie.
No, it's not. Bell, exceptionally organized, also exceptionally ambitious. I think you bring up a good point. Just something to watch, and, you know, if you see that guy leave earlier than expected and maybe take a job that doesn't immediately fit in your mind, just, you know, file this away right now. That it may not necessarily be that, you know, there's the staff doesn't get along or that he doesn't like Tallahassee or anything else. I just think that's a guy that wants to run his own program, and it'll be very interesting to see the timeline that he ultimately chooses to kind of pursue that goal towards.
Absolutely. So a couple things here on the quarterback and the passing game. Somebody remarked to me, you know, one of the major simplicity angles on this is how much more simplified the drop back passing game is. And that really fits in with my next item on the agenda as well. And that is, if you watched any of these clips from the first 2 days, which are fully open, or today, which was only open 15 minutes, or if you happen to, you know, have good sources, man, they run some type of play action, type of handoff element on almost every single passing play. Do you know who's going to be the most happy about this?
I have various ideas, but which you referring to a particular position group or
the 300-pounders,
offensive line, or
because yes, the offensive line is going to love this, because you know what you don't want to do as offensive line, you don't want to just do drop back passing and pass protection. That's not fun. That's not fun at all. We know that Florida State's offensive tackle situation is very scary, right? You had Josh Ball get you know booted for the domestic situation. You had Rick Leonard declare early for the NFL draft and go in, what, the fourth round? I mean, that was very, very good for him, obviously, but not good for FSU. Having the ability to present run action on almost all of your pass plays will slow down the opposing defensive line a good bit. Now, look, there are some defensive lines you play, Clemson, who will probably still have their way with you. But ultimately, this is going to be something that is going to help this offensive line. We talked about, will the offensive line be better this year? I'm not convinced. Will they look better? Maybe so. And I think part of that is a little bit more use of the RPO game, a little more use of running the quarterback, which helps you, you know, with your blocking angles and having the extra blocker there, especially to get the edge. But also all the different things you can do to slow down the opposing pass rush and the opposing rush. Tempo helps with this as well. It's harder to dial up really complex blitz schemes if you're facing a bunch of tempo. But I think just how much play action they're running, you might think, okay, play action takes a long time to develop. It does, absolutely. However, as a defensive lineman, if you got somebody coming out, look like they're block and run, you, for the most part, can't just pure pass rush on this, you know? So I do think that's going to help them quite a bit.
Affects every level of the defense. If you're a linebacker, you can't try to get back into your zone as quickly. If you're safety, you got to keep your eyes in the backfield for half a second longer. You've got to make your initial read and then kind of double check that based off what you see. playing out in the backfield. It's something that can buy you a half second, a quarter second, and it's something that at least plants the seed of having to make a decision, of having to read a decision at damn near every position on the defensive side of the ball.
Also, if you're going to be running the ball as much as we expect, you know what else is going to happen most likely? The defense is going to have to respect the run even more, right? That's going to be big, man. I really think that will matter a whole heck of a lot. So I'm excited to see that. Now, I think this team will struggle some in obvious passing downs, to be honest. I think the loss of those tackles is going to hurt them in like third and nine type situations. It's hard. Tempo can't really cover that up, and play action fakes won't really cover that up. That's just going to be tough. But I think they will probably be in fewer of those situations, number one. So how do you do better in those? First of all, you can reduce the number of those you have on a percentage basis, and that will help you quite a bit. And hopefully, you can stay out of that stuff. Also, you may be more comfortable throwing it up to one of your guys, and hopefully they can make a play for you. But on your average passing stuff, I think they're going to do a better job of scheming to help out the obvious deficiency that is the offensive tackle position. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, very much so. But we kind of mentioned it there as far as a weakness in general with the or maybe a concern with the offensive line. But I don't want us to necessarily do a deep dive here. But why don't we just kind of give 2 to 3 minutes as far as an idea as to what the depth is at offensive tackle, who we've seen line up where, and what may be a little bit concerning for us at this point in practice.
Sure. So, I think your starters might be okay, right? You have Juwan Williams, who I know they're really crossing their fingers can stay healthy. His shoulder has been an issue 2 years in a row. And you have Landon Dickerson, whose best position is guard. Ingram, that is a little bit scary. That is who your starters are. Behind them, it is a big question mark. We just don't know what's going to happen there. Abdul Bello has played some. Again, if you have to put him in, that's kind of scary to me. Jalen Goss is not a guy physically who is ready to play. He's a true freshman and not an early enrollee. That's certainly concerning there. However, I am not that concerned about Brian Burns smoking these guys in one-on-one practice reps, pass rush drill with no pads on. And here's why. I know there was a big uproar about this from some other media guys, and I'm not trying to blast other media guys or anything. I'm just saying, look, I do this for a living where I'm at these recruit camps, and I see elite players at offensive tackle get embarrassed routinely by elite defensive ends in these things. These drills where they're doing this one-on-one pass pro stuff with no pads on are absolutely favoring the defense by a large margin. The defense knows you're not gonna run. It's pass only. It's one-on-one. There's a ton of space. Especially a guy like Brian Burns, who's like 235, 240 pounds. He can hit you with a spin move. He can speed move you. He knows you're not really going to be able to hit him because you don't even have pads on. There's no threat that you're going to run a draw at him. It's not a great simulation of his chances of succeeding in a game, although I do think he'll have a good year rushing the passer. I just wouldn't be quite as worried as maybe some other folks have been who don't get to see that type of drill on a weekly basis.
I think that's great perspective. It is. And it's real easy to go out there and look at a guy that's having a hard time blocking any defensive end, much less somebody like Burns. You're not going to get on a linebacker for an inability to coverage in 7-on-7 all that frequently just because it's not a place that puts himself to succeed. Certainly not any kind of long, lengthy route. And I kind of look at the offensive tackle just blocking, trying to block a defensive end with no threat of being chipped, with no running back to help, no responsibility of any kind other than to pin his ears back and go. I would just be hesitant to take too much away from what you see offensive tackles maybe struggling to block one of the better pass rushers in the country.
Absolutely, man. Well, look, I think in a game they're going to have a better chance of denying Brian Burns. But you know what? Hopefully doesn't get denied. Your mortgage application. And we got a good commitment to tell you about. After 6 weeks off, we are proud to bring back Resolution Home Loans, man. How about that? They're back in the fold, signed up for the year. That is awesome. So all three sponsors that we had last year are back with us. I think that says a lot about the relationship we have with them. Very excited to have them on for another year. As you know, Chad and Shannon personally help you with your loan. We've had, I might need two hands now pretty soon to count the number of loan closings we've had with Resolution Home Loans. They have their fast close guarantee. They want to give you a lot of great personal service. You can go to fsuhomeloans.com. That's fsuhomeloans.com or 844-FSU-LOAN. And we'll have even more information about some of their new programs coming out soon. But just got the news tonight that they have decided to re-up. So we're very excited to be able to break that commitment news on the Nolcast.
We're very excited. Like you said, it says an awful lot that we're able to have continuity with our sponsors. It also says an awful lot to our listeners for supporting those that make the Nolcast possible. So thank you very much. Chad, Shannon, this is their passion. It's what they do. They love it. You're going to work directly with them. You're not going to be, you know, some long account number on some file somewhere. You're going to have direct access to the people that are the most important in your process. And you're working with a company that does their own underwriting, processing, and closing all in-house. It's how they're able to do it faster than almost anybody else out there in the game. And we're really thrilled to be able to work with them for another year.
Ingram, speaking of fast, right? There's been a lot of talk recently. Is FSU really going to be a tempo team? Because some of the media members have seen the install going on in practice, and they're not sure if it's being installed in an up-tempo rate. And I have some thoughts on that, and I'm going to share them now at a regular speed. You don't dip your toe into being a tempo team, right? You've got to dive in. There's no selective tempo in year one. You don't erect signs that say speed limit fast on your practice field if you're planning to be a mid-level tempo team. You don't go to your introductory press conference and say, we want to go fast unless we're in the formatted offense. You know, you don't say we want to push the tempo. We want to catch the defense off guard. We want to make sure that we get guys running open down the field because the defense didn't get lined up properly. We want to create free runners. You've got to go all in. Tempo is not just a strategy. It's a mindset, right? It really is a program belief. Now, I do think that there are times when you can selectively tempo, right? We saw Oregon do this a little bit when they had Mariota. But I do not really believe that year one of this system is a time where you're going to see this very much, if at all. Not by design, at least. I think there's a chance you could see it if they, you know, have some struggles with it, obviously, which I think they could because it's a brand new system. And you know, I know that there's been some blowups at practice where they're not happy with how fast some of the kids are getting out there. And we've seen that. But as an example, they are absolutely drilling tempo into these kids. After basically every rep of most of the drills that the receivers run, do you know what they do? They take and sprint the ball to a GA or a student assistant who is basically simulating the referee, and then they sprint back to the back of the line. That is meant to simulate giving the ball to the ref and running back to get lined up. They've got to get these guys very much conditioned, not just physically, but mentally. That's got to be ingrained in them. Go, go, go. This is a fast tempo team. You want to catch people off guard. You want to get a couple shots a game where guys are running down the field wide open, and you want to hit one or two of those if you can. That's really important. You know, you can't just I do not agree with the idea that they are going to on purpose be a real like a super selectively tempo team. If you have a super veteran quarterback, you know, 1 year with a real veteran offense, and you know want to for some reason slow down for a couple series at a time, okay, but not in year one. In year one, it's about setting the tone and tempo for your program. And this offense is based on being a up-tempo offense. So I'm not buying into that.
It'll be really interesting to look. I mean, anytime you do something that's drastically different, you have it's a learning process. And ultimately, the want of this offense, what it's all built around, is going fast. That's what the product on the field is going to look like. And again, I think... And this is human nature. I'm not being critical of people, but I think it's just real easy to take away, you know, one or two things that you see from the first day of practice and try to extrapolate it to something that that may not necessarily be the case. You bring up a very valid one and slightly humorous to me as you state it, but you don't have, you know, speed limit fast signs erected to then, you know, go at a pedestrian pace. It's what the offense is built around. It's what the identity of your head coach is, and it's very much what you're going to see on the field come Saturday. So, Bud, I think we did a decent job just giving some initial observations about the offense. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball. Probably won't be quite as lengthy or as many things to discuss, but there were some interesting takeaways from Harlan Barnett's first press conference and what we've seen from the first 3 days of practice.
I did get a pretty good laugh at a Barnett laughing at the idea that he will be running a Nick Saban-style cover three patterned match system.
Got a healthy chuckle out of it. There's been a couple responses to media that I've just kind of secretly gotten a laugh at from various members of the staff. But
the did I stutter?
Did I stutter? Yeah. That was one too. Yeah. Did I stutter? Okay.
You know, that was definitely interesting. Obviously, we told people, look, the kids are being shown clips of Michigan State's cover four defense. It's the Narduzzi D'Antonio system, which Barnett runs. It's different than what Nick runs. They're both really good defenses. They both are you know, varying levels of complexity. I think this is a little bit simpler to run and implement. And look, they both have obviously had a lot of success, but they are different. Now, will they ever run cover three? Yes. Do they run pattern matching? Yes, in different ways. Obviously, it's not cover three match. It's more cover four match. They will probably run some cover three on third downs. They at Michigan State, they used to run their cover four stuff. I was reading on one of the Michigan newspapers almost 90% of the time, and now they run it about 75% of the time, which is a ton to run one thing, especially, I mean, at least on standard downs. But I got a good chuckle out of that. But I did like this, though. This I thought was really insightful. Barnett said that one of the reasons they want to keep the defense simple is because they want the defense to be able to observe and use their football IQ and think about how the offense is likely to attack them. Think about that. That's kind of cool. So if you already know what your job is and it's so second nature to what your job is to do, in this basic scheme that you're running for the most part, you can take a little time to think about, okay, how are they lining up? What looks different here to me? Wait, is that weird? You know, why is it split here and not there, right? Okay, so they're probably going to, he took a split more to the inside. He's probably going to want, you know, look at his leverage. He's probably going to try to run a route that breaks out towards the sideline. If you're not thinking about what your own job is quite so much, you may actually have some time or more time to think about what the opposition might try to attack you with. I think that was a really enlightening thing that Barnett said.
I mean, I like it. I like it. Just the idea that you're so familiar with what your job is that you're able to look around and maybe in a way even get a better idea as to how you're able to increase your ability to impact the defense. And if you're super familiar and confident in what you're wanting to do, then you're absolutely right. You can notice that all of a sudden the guard and tackle splits are 2.5 inches wider than they are normally, or just various things that can give you a better idea as to what ultimately is going to unfold in front of you, and you can get a better idea as to why would a guard be pulling on this particular play or anything else. So I love it. I love the idea of just the overall simplicity of what you ask of the players, kind of permeating throughout the program, and it'll be very interesting to see if you're able to see a unit that is confident in what they're asked of, and to such a degree that maybe they're able to be even more impactful just because of their own grasp of their own philosophy.
Absolutely. And the final thing on defense, I think that we should discuss for tonight, since we are we're coming up close to an hour. I'm sure it'll cut down a little bit. Stanford Samuels III playing a little more free safety, just like he did some in the spring. I wrote about this on Tomahawk Nation, and I think this is an interesting topic, Ingram. But one of the things with this defense, right, is that your star position. And I think I said this last episode, too. Did we talk about this last episode, the difference in the star position?
I believe we've talked about this in the past two episodes, yeah.
Okay. So it's more of a hybrid linebacker safety rather than a hybrid corner safety, which is what it was in the old defense, the Saban scheme that Kelly was trying to run. Now, when you have that bigger star position, that means that you're going to be better against the run, most likely, with him. And that his coverage responsibilities are going to be more limited compared to the old defense. So he's going to cover more underneath routes. He will probably not cover as many down the field routes. Now, if you do that, what do you need to do to compensate in the back end? Well, you will need to make sure that one of your safeties is a really good cover guy, probably a guy with legitimate corner skills. Oh, hello, Stanford Samuels. Funny to see you back there. It does seem like you have very legitimate corner skills and are a really talented player. Teams will try to run their slot receiver at the safety in this defense. So you will often see Samuels lined up, not like right up on the line of scrimmage, but you could kind of draw a straight line from the slot receiver to the free safety here. Typically what will happen is the free safety will read he'll read 2-1, right? That is, he will look at number two, which is going to be your slot. He will see, okay, is he going to run a deep route, a vertical route, if you will? If so, I'm going to take him basically in man-to-man coverage. I'm going to convert my zone coverage to man coverage if he's coming at me and going deep. If he's not, I'm going to let the star position handle him in underneath, shorter route coverage, and then I'm going to go help the outside corner on that guy if he's heading deep. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Samuels is an extremely instinctive player. He was an excellent two-way player in high school. He was also the quarterback for that Pembroke Pines team that won the state title. A really heady guy. I think he makes a perfect fit in this defense. And you might say, well, will that hurt his draft stock? I don't really think so. Number one, he's only a sophomore. He could easily move back next year, especially if Taylor goes pro early, or if Myers were to go pro early. But he's also going to get plenty of one-on-one type reps there at corner. Or not at corner, excuse me, but in terms of like corner-like coverage, because we know he'll be covering slots in space, and that is a tough ask. But I think he should be up for the job if he continues to play there.
Do you remember, this was back in like the middle 2000s, early 2000s, where some Florida State defensive players started to get to the point where they weren't kind of getting the benefit of the doubt. In fact, it'd almost be like a increased skepticism as far as drafting some Florida State players on defense.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I think at this point, the inverse is in play when evaluating a member of the safety of Florida State right now. I think you're going to get the benefit of the doubt, and being able to show that you're versatile and deployed in many ways is only going to help your stock on Sunday. And am I making too much out of the fact that you have a player that's 2 years out of college and maybe the best cornerback in the league right now? Maybe, but I think I think you're going to get a fair look if you're a Florida State defensive back by the people on Sunday right now.
Absolutely, man. I think it makes a ton of sense. And I'm excited to see what Samuels can do there. With that, we ask that you please give us 5 stars on iTunes. That definitely helps us out. We want to continue to be the most popular FSU show out there. We are number one for a reason. We also want to go with one more sponsor. People might say, do you guys need 4 sponsors during the season? And my answer to you is yeah. Compare our listening time to sponsorship time to that of a radio show, and I think you will see that we offer far better value in terms of talk to ad reads. They're very personable ad reads. We try to weave them into the show. And if you're an advertiser out there, also know that, look, while people might channel surf radios, they do not channel surf podcasts. I do not, when I'm listening during the day, I don't switch from the ESPN Fantasy Baseball podcast to the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast when they start hawking mattresses or whatever they are advertising on that day. If you're serious about advertising with us, I know Ingram, has been in the radio industry for over a decade. We have great packages, and we'd love to have you with us. thenolcast@gmail.com.
Absolutely. We'd love to work with anybody. If you happen to be an automobile dealership, we have a particularly friendly deal that we'd love to explore with you. So,
do we want to give them the details of that?
I think we'll save the details for email, but we'd love to correspond with anybody that thinks they could grow their brand by partnering with us. I'll point out that we don't do large national ads. Trust me, I get contacted, I don't know, daily is hyperbole, but we've turned down many a mattress ad, many a food, think of all the standard ads you listen to when you listen to podcasts.
Like a meal delivery service?
Yes, yes. We've turned down many a meal delivery service, many a mattress deal, many a shape space named company, and others that you... you frequently hear when you listen to a podcast. So we like working. All of our sponsors have strong Florida State ties, Florida State leadership, ownership, and we would love to partner with you if you think it'd be beneficial. So whether you be a sponsor or a listener or anybody else, thank you very much for supporting the podcast over the years. Hope you've enjoyed this particular episode, and we look forward to speaking with you next week.
Absolutely, and we're going to have, I think, 5 or 6 more episodes in August alone. So, very excited. Get your tickets for the bar crawl. See you all soon.